There's a good ball played in for Tony Morley. Oh, he missed it! And it is! Peter Will!
Welcome everyone to From Witten to Rotterdam, an Aston Villa podcast. We're your hosts. My name is Eddie.
And I'm Pascal.
James cannot be with us this weekend, unfortunately, but he is sending his best. But we are delighted to be joined by Chris, chairman of the German Lions. Chris, how you doing?
Pretty good, pretty good. And you guys?
You know, getting by.
Yeah.
Doing well?
Yeah, coming off, it would be better if Villa started the first half as well as the start of the second half. We'll get into that in a little bit.
Yeah.
But before we talk about Villa and, you know, their constant way of disappointing us, I think the first thing we can start off with is talk a little bit about you, Chris, with our global villain section. So, you know, we were chatting a little bit offline. I know you're from Cologne out in Germany. I'd love to hear a little bit about just some origins, you know, how you started following the Villa, you know, what inspired you to, you know, follow this pretty random team, especially with such a prominent league in your home country. It's not like, you know, you're supporting out of a smaller place. So with the Bundesliga being so big and the quality of teams being there being so big, what made you sort of sign on with Villa?
My uncle lived in Birmingham, I think, in the 90s. And I'm 29 years old, so I think it was the better era of the Villa. And he bought me a jersey, brought the jersey to Cologne, and I liked the color, the name. I was pretty young then, and so it started.
Nice. And what would you say are kind of like your best memories growing up supporting Aston Villa?
It's pretty hard because I think I think when I really took notice of the Villa and followed, I think the Martin O'Neill years, the Martin O'Neill years were the best years so far. No cup for me, so no trophy. I don't know.
You get a third place championship trophy, so I mean,
yeah, exactly.
It counts.
Yeah, depressingly, like my home team of Cologne, so they both struggling throughout the years.
Oh man, so just thinking about that a little bit, you know, you mentioned that, like, you know, you kind of picked it up through your uncle. It's something that's sort of like spread, and then you kind of went on to start this, you know, supporters chapter in Germany. So I want to know a little bit about what that looks like, sort of like how that got going, where the idea came from, and, you know, is it just you kind of operating like a bunch of remote Villa fans, or like, is there like a meetup? Like, tell me a little bit about the culture of the German villains and how it started.
Sure. I did not create the club. I'm just the fourth chairman. I think Dirk Unschuld created the club with others in 1998. So I think we are one of the oldest supporters clubs outside of the UK. And yeah, I joined the German Villains in 2011. I think my first trip with them was to Ewood Park in Blackburn. We played 1-1 and Zogbia scored a goal. And Zogbia, man, what a time. The problem is we are a countrywide supporters club, so we don't have usually meetups like the Americans do. I saw photos on Twitter with gatherings of 30 people in bars. That's not what it looked like in Germany, because most of the supporters are from the Cologne area. Then we have some in Berlin, in Bavaria, in the north, in Bremen, Hamburg, and so on. So our meetups are in Birmingham and not in Germany. So most of the games I'm watching from home alone with my son or wife or alone. It's not like in other countries.
It's good to see you got your son on the bandwagon as well. Hopefully the good times come back. We're around the same age, actually, so our memories, well, good and bad memories, are probably quite parallel. So it's quite interesting, actually, that you actually meet in the UK, like at the games. What would you say, like, your favourite live experience was going to a Villa game?
Definitely the Wembley against Derby County. I was against Fulham and Derby County, so my Wembley counter is tight at the moment. So I wasn't at the game in the League Cup final. So the next Wembley trip I made, we hopefully win again.
You have a good look, Trav. We were missing that day. I was at that game and, you know, I certainly didn't bring any. So next time I'll need to make sure you're on the flight. So, you know, you've mentioned, you know, you've been to the big games at Wembley. You know, how much, you know, you mentioned also your uncle has like lived in Birmingham for a bit. Like, so I'm wondering like how your interactions have been with the city, but also I know the Lions clubs are typically like an extension of Villa, you know, they run them and they help like maintain them. So I'm also curious as to like, as a chairman, what your interactions have been directly with the club.
Yeah, we interact with the club through mail or Twitter or Facebook. We have a chairman's a group in Facebook, but I've never attended a chairman meeting in Birmingham because of the pandemic, and I can't fly it every week to Brum to attend a meeting there. So it's always online interaction with the club. But since Lee Priest took over, that's the supporters, should I say manager, supporters manager. He's very nice to us, and he's a good bloke.
I've never actually really, doing this podcast, it really opens up to me like how wide the support is worldwide of this fantastic football club. And it's crazy that, like, you know, you get a lot of guys from Europe constantly going to like Villa games like on a regular basis. It's really amazing to see.
Yeah, that's been something I've found so interesting since, you know, talking with people like you, Chris. You know, it's people make the flight and make the journey so many times. I'm thinking back to like our conversations with, you know, Chris from Norway and just like other folks like constantly making their way there. I mean, it's more so than I can do. So, I mean, that must be incredible. I think I have one last question though, thinking about, you know, again, being in a city that's not just had, that you're not only supporting Villa, but like you have like a major Bundesliga team and a team that's like historically, you know, been around the same place as Villa more or less. So I'm wondering, you know, this is more just like a kind of a silly question, but like as preference, like, do you prefer watching the Bundesliga or do you prefer watching the Prem?
To be honest, I prefer watching the Bundesliga, but yeah, it's yeah. I only watch the Villa in the Prem, to be honest, because the Bundesliga is I think the Bundesliga is different to the Prem, with lesser star power from the players. I mean, you see it in Sancho is joining Dortmund from City, and he's a big star in the Bundesliga now and is an England international. I think he never made the cut in City. And if he stayed in City, he would never been an England international, maybe, because the Prem has this big money power. And I like the Bundesliga with their talents, and the fans are cheerful and proud of their teams. Cologne played at Arsenal 3 years ago in the Europa League, and we've took 20,000 people to the Emirates. And I think the Daily Mirror or something like that said the Cologne fans told us we are not that passionate anymore. The big clubs like Arsenal and United are more like a library. So I prefer the Bundesliga as a whole.
Yeah, it's really good. Like, obviously, you know more about it than we do, but like the way like the prices are for like the fan tickets and stuff like that, it's a lot more reasonable for like the average person. So there's definitely things that the Premier League could improve on. I have one silly, simple question. Aston Villa, FC Cologne, Champions League final. Who are you supporting?
Oh, God, no. Oh man, that's so hard. I think I prefer Cologne, but my son is preferring the Villa at the moment. He said to me, "Dad, I want the new jersey to Christmas from the Villa and not from the FC." So I think my son would prefer the Villa, and I would prefer Cologne because it's like I love the Villa, but I'm not a Birmingham native, so I could never feel the same as you, for example. You're a Birmingham native.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I love the Villa, but But like I said, my son preferred the Villas.
Fair enough. Yeah. So looking back today, 4-3, Southampton 4, Villa 3. A little bit of a roller coaster ride it was 7 a.m. here because of the daylight savings. Hopefully a little bit later for you folks. But Chris, I'll start with you. I mean, I just want to get your general reactions, you know, especially going into the game. How are you feeling? And, you know, what was your sort of take as soon as we got started? Because it was quite a rough first half.
Yeah, it was quite a rough start. I think it was like the last match. I think against Leeds, it was quite the same. I just look at the stats. We have 19 total shots, 10 on target, more than Southampton. But you can't sleep the first half in the Premier League. You get punished. And you said it, the set pieces were awful. My stream was awful too. So the quality of my stream was so bad. I think I missed most of the game, but I saw the goals, unfortunately. So, yeah.
I was going to say, lucky you that you missed most of the game, but unfortunately you managed.
Yeah. It was so awful, man. The set pieces were so awful. And I think I love Matty Cash the last matches, but Cash wasn't that good today. I think McGinn was a bit sleepy. I don't know.
Yeah, I was talking to Eddie off air before we did this, and I had Matty Cash, Douglas Luiz as being particularly poor. I said Tyrone Mings, and literally as soon as I typed the message, he went and scored the header. So that kind of took him out of the conversation a little bit. But yeah, as you've said it bang on, Chris. You know, in the Premier League, no matter who you're playing against, you can't have a first half like that where you start. So it was so flat. Like, we just didn't get started in the first half. And like, it could have been like 4 or 5 to Southampton in the first half. Luckily, well, I'd say luckily, but we kept it down to 3. And then second half, you're thinking, oh, here we go. Because the first 5 minutes of the second half, it looked like, oh, okay, we're going to actually like press with a bit more intensity and stuff. And then obviously Danny Ings scores like a worldie. One thing as well, 3 of their goals were absolute worldies. Do you know what I mean? Like, I know 2 of them were like free kicks. So you can't really be giving away super set pieces, but like, hats off, like, you know, to score 2 free kicks in the same game is a pretty incredible feat. But what annoyed me is the most about the game, what I'm most disappointed is, why did we start to press and play with intensity when we were 4-0 down? Is it a case of Southampton took their foot off the gas, or did something just click? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, just thinking about it from when I was watching it, it did seem like the game plan almost wanted to give them a little bit too much respect in the first part. Like, we weren't pressing them in the way that they were pressing us. Like, they were very much in our faces from the first whistle. And it showed, you know, I think, you know, you're really fair to say that, like, I think Luiz had a rough game. But also, like, thinking about from the front, we started to have a lot of success when Watkins and Grealish started to pressure their back four. You know, there is a mistake in Nathaniel Klein and then Ryan Bertrand. Like, you know, they're good players, but they're not like exceptional players. And if you hassle them a little bit, like, that's when we started to see, you know, a little bit more joy. So kind of thinking about that, one person who I think was almost unlucky to not get on the score sheet because of the work rate and the stuff he was doing, the little things he was doing, was Trezeguet. I'm sure you knew that. So I know I was banging on the drum for Traore to start before the game off air. But I'm curious as to what folks thought of, you know, his short cameo before coming off. And, you know, what did you make of Trezeguet today? Because I think he was, you know, he had a good game despite getting stonewalled a few times. Very unluckily, if I might add.
It's hard to say anything about Troy because he was only on the pitch for like half an hour. And I know he had that one chance from Barkley, but you can't really judge a player on such a short amount of time. I thought Trez was outstanding when he came on. He was very unlucky not to score. McCarthy had a, as you said, Chris, as well, we had more shots and more shots on target than Southampton as well. So he was unlucky, I think. You know, the keeper had a bit of a blinder, especially in the second half. Again, maybe we needed that against a team like Southampton. You know, the high-intensity winger with Traore is a little bit more, I wouldn't say lazy, but a bit more kind of lackadaisical on the ball. A bit more of a luxury. Obviously, there's a lot more to come from him, which we'll see. But yeah, it'd be great to hear your thoughts as well, Chris.
Yeah, I think I like Trez. He, I don't know what, how to say it, but he's a special player. I would prefer him to Bernard Traoré anytime. I don't want to be that negative towards Bernard, but I think Trez is more. He's more prem level at the moment because Bernard is new to the league, and he's more sharp. Sharp is a good word. I think he's more sharp than Bernard. And yeah, he was a bit unlucky today.
I'm just thinking of that one McCarthy save where he hit it into the ground and kind of full on extended himself,
yeah,
kind of diving backwards. Ugh. Yeah, it was a tough one. And I actually really like the way you kind of framed that, Pascal. Like, you know, like a little bit of a luxury player, Traoré, in a game where I think we're going to be a little bit more evenly matched and we're going to have to do a little bit more dirty work, you know, when we're off the ball. I do think Trezeguet offers a little bit more. I thought it was going to be a bit more open from the off, which I don't think our game plan allowed it to be, which is why I thought Traoré would have been a good start. But hopefully, you know, regardless of that, who's starting, I hope he's, you know, it's nothing too serious because we do lack that depth. And that's another thing I kind of want to talk about a little bit. You know, once we went 2-0 down, you're kind of hoping that, like, we change something a little bit. You know, I know Pascal and I have talked about this off air a little bit, but Chris, I want to get your thoughts. Like, the game plan seems pretty rigid in what we're doing. You know, we do a few different things within the game plan, but it's a pretty straightforward, this is our formation, this is how we have to play. So I'm wondering what your thoughts were on the tactics today, because especially early on, I thought Dean Smith got it wrong. And that's been the case a few times that we've seen him, especially in these sort of, it didn't end up being a lopsided loss, but like these losses that start to look a little lopsided.
Yeah, you said it right. I think Dean has this one plan and he follows straight no matter what happened. He reminds me of our coach in Cologne. He's the same, always the same plan, always the same tactics, no matter what the opponent is, what the other team is doing. I think we can say he's getting out-coached from other coach. I think Hasenhüttl, he was also a Bundesliga coach at Leipzig. He's a great coach. He did a great job in Leipzig, forming a team with perfect tactics, fast players, and I think Dino is limited. Can I say limited? He's, yeah, limited is a good word. You nodded. So I'm pretty nervous, to be honest. It's my first time in English. So yeah, I think Dean seems to be pretty limited, but and our starting 11 is so good. But if one player gets injured, we pretty F-worded, I think. We saw it in the League Cup, and yeah, we've won 4 games, so we shouldn't bury Dean that much. But it's, I don't know, man.
I'm trying not to, you know. It's a weird feeling. Like normally after a loss, you're quite downbeat. But the second half, we were like, well, I say the second half, the last 20 minutes, we were like Barcelona. Do you know what I mean? Like in their prime. Yeah. So it's a really difficult one. At the end of the day, we've lost the game. We've lost the game. We've conceded 4 goals at home to a team who, realistically, we want to be finishing in the same kind of position too. So it is disappointing in that perspective. However, you know, we've also scored 3 goals at home. Probably without, you know, if not for Alex McCarthy, a brilliant display, probably could have like gone on to win the game or got a point or something. Actually, my friend's dad on another chat said if that game went on for another 10 minutes, we would have got a draw because Southampton completely collapsed, especially after Mings scored, Southampton pretty much collapsed. And it just, it's just, again, we go back to it. Why don't you play with this intensity from the beginning? You covered it. You said it right, Eddie. We gave them just far too much respect. You know, you can't be doing that in Premier League, especially on home, well, on home turf. Although, obviously, without the fans, home and away is a little bit different now. But we can't be giving teams that much respect in the Premier League. But, you know, we move on to Arsenal next week.
Can we say the comeback was outstanding, but we can build off this comeback maybe against Arsenal?
I'd like to hope
The positive take from that game, maybe. Watkins scoring is also good.
Yeah. Yeah, it's positive. You know, you look at Watkins, he's got 4 in 6 games now, but albeit he's only scored in 2 of them. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So on paper, looks outstanding, but it was, what was interesting about Watkins, the penalty. We won the penalty and it looked like he stole the ball from Jack Grealish, which was quite interesting. It would have been a lot more interesting if he didn't score the penalty, what would have happened after. But obviously, as the striker, you kind of want him to score the goals for your team. Do you know what I mean? It does him a massive confidence boost as well. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen a lot of Brentford fans actually slating his penalty ability before that, because he didn't score any from the spot last year. And they were, I don't know where it came from. If he wasn't taking any from the spot, they kind of seemed like really down at his penalty abilities, even though I don't know how many times they actually saw him do it. But it was a confident penalty. Ran up, took it well. And I think he'll be well served to get amongst the goals again. I think that's going to be a big boon for his confidence. But we've talked a little bit about tactics. So I actually want to go back to Southampton's tactics a little bit. You know, Dino is a man who has a plan, but that's his plan. But I'd like to talk a little bit about Hasenhüttl, who, you know, the Alpine Klopp, as they call him, the Austrian. I'm wondering a little bit as to what you guys made of the way they set up, because it almost looked like, rather than a diamond, Southampton was almost sitting in a box. There were just, you know, two folks sitting behind the front, the back four. And their wingers playing almost like a little bit inward. It was an odd looking formation. And it just felt like we didn't know how to fully cope with it until we started getting the ball wider later in the game. So, Chris, maybe, you know, your thoughts on Southampton, how they set up, how they just generally looked. Because it's a team who I think always starts a little slow, but always ends really strong. And this is usually the time when they start picking up steam.
Yeah, just like I said earlier, Hasenhüttl, I like him as a coach. He was also a player in Cologne, but he was abysmal back then. So he's still way better than way better as a coach than as a player. I think he played in Leipzig with similar winger style. I don't know exactly which winger he had back then. I think Emil Forsberg, the Swede, he's on the left. He was like the same as today. I mean, he's got Walcott. Walcott is way older than back in the day, but Walcott is still a fast player. So the system is very similar to the Leipzig one. And Southampton is always a team, like you said, who's picking up the points when they play a bit more games. So intercept pieces were great, like you guys said earlier. So I don't know how to say it.
Yeah, I think what you're looking to say is they build momentum, and once they start winning a couple of games, they're very
different. Yes, yeah, exactly.
Which they showed last season after lockdown as well. I think I read somewhere that after lockdown, after Manchester City and Liverpool, they got the most amount of points in the league. And I think that has continued into this season. So, you know, we knew they were going to be a very difficult to play against. All right, so yeah, Southampton's tactics. As it seemed that they played Walcott and Stuart Armstrong directly behind Ings and Adams, kind of like two central attacking midfielders. They didn't play with a lot of width at all. And that seemed to completely negate the impact of McGinn and Louise, who you could arguably say were our two worst performers on the pitch. Interestingly enough, I didn't think Southampton strikers, apart from obviously Ings scoring, didn't really do that much. I didn't really think they caused the defence too much problems. Obviously, when you look at the goals, they scored from 3 set pieces, 2 absolutely ridiculous, you know, David Beckham, Janinho-style, like, free kicks. And then, obviously, the first set piece was just poor zone. This is what I hate about zonal marking, because players are marking space and not men. You've got McGinn marking Vestergaard, who is, like, a renowned, massive aerial threat. So, you know, there needs to be a plan when we play against these tall teams to see if there's an ability to change from zonal to man marking, because ultimately it cost us.
Absolutely. I mean, I think one of the things that I've really liked about Hasenhüttl's tenure, just from like a appreciating the game perspective, is like I feel like he's gotten the most out of that team. You know, a few months before, Vestergaard was out kind of out in the cold, you know, not getting a game, and now he's coming in. He's been immense for them. Danny Ings has, you know, been one of the hottest players in the league since, you know, coming back into the fold, getting back to Southampton. You know, even Theo Walcott, who's like been struggling to get game time at Everton, like, you know, it's a small sample size, but he's looked really good. I think he knows how to really maximize the folks he has. He knows his personnel really well, and he knows how to, you know, get a tune out of them. So that's been, I mean, that's been like great to see, not like today against us, but great to see. And I think the last thing we'll talk about with this game before we're kind of getting your match ball and maybe your, I don't know what the opposite of match ball is, but I think we'll do that one too, is just talk about set pieces a little bit. I've seen a lot of commentary on, you know, the internet. Obviously, Villa Twitter can get pretty negative after a loss, you know, trying to keep things on the positive end. But folks are kind of going on a little bit about, you know, not only giving away some of the free kicks we did, but, you know, Emi setting up the wall, Emi, you know, positioning himself. I personally think there was nothing he was going to do about James Ward-Prowse putting those two in the top bin, especially on his birthday. I mean, that man is man possessed. But I'm wondering, Chris, I'll start with you. Like, what did you make of the two, three set piece goals? I forgot the Vestergaard one came from a set piece as well.
I mean, it's not a secret that Vestergaard is like 3 meters high. So, like Pascal said, McGinn was targeting him. That's ridiculous. Vestergaard wasn't that great player in the Bundesliga, but he scored like 3 goals per season because of shit like that. You know. I think. Did they put a man on the post in general set pieces in defending?
They do sometimes, but they definitely didn't for that one. There was no.
Yeah. Why? We have to ask why, because that's embarrassing. I mean, your scouts. Are obviously scouting the next opponents, and you see a Vestergaard like 3 meters high. I don't know why we put a man on the post and McGinn marking him. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, going back to what Pascal said, it's that sort of tactical rigidity, if you will. You know, we always zone mark. We're not going to shift it just because we're playing, you know, a man mountain in Vestergaard. And I think that shows some naivety still, you know, which is stuff that you think we would have worked through after having a full season. I don't know, Pascal, if you have any more thoughts on that.
Nah, it's just a sloppy first half performance, really. That's all. I think that's all you can game, really, to be honest with you.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not going to say it's a match ball because we lost, and I don't think we should get a match ball, but let's do, if everyone has one kudos to give and maybe a wet willy for someone they thought had a particularly bad game. Chris, let's start with you.
The worst man on the pitch, McGinn or Douglas Luiz, maybe.
And do you have a big positive out of the day? Someone you thought, you know, did make a good account of himself?
I think Jack or Tress. I like Tres today, man.
Yeah, I thought he changed the dynamic of the game when he came on a little bit. You know, we were still terrible, but he did change it a little bit.
Yeah.
For me, Grealish, man, our man of the match by a country mile. As usual, all our good positive things came through him. And his goal at the end was brilliant. You can tell he was so stuff when he shot the ball as well. He did not. He was just so angry when he kicked the ball in the net. Do you know what I mean? It was good. He completely caught the keeper off guard, which I was quite surprised given the game that McCarthy had beforehand. I thought he was outstanding. So, yeah, Grealish was, in my opinion, our best player and our worst player. There's a few, but I'd say Douglas Luiz as well. And I really like Luiz, but he was poor. And Matty Cash a close second.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think for my kudos, I have to agree with you, Pascal. I mean, Grealish, especially in that second half, like I think one of the things I liked about his performance compared to last week is he was trying to get his teammates a lot more involved. Like you could tell he was looking for the extra pass. He was, you know, keeping his head up a little bit more. And, you know, when he's playing like that, a little bit more off the cuff, but like trust in the people around them, like great things were happening. And I think that was really positive to see. My wet willy here is, I think it's going to go to Matty Cash. I think he had, you know, between the handball and just, you know, this, that, and the other, he was just getting run ragged. I think he had a lot of trouble coping. That's, you know, the second week in a row, I think he's, you know, he's looked a little bit frazzled. You know, I think he's had a few really good games this season. I have no doubts that he's going to come back good. But I think right now he's just like had a little bit of a dip in form, maybe a dip in confidence, and hopefully that bounces back soon. But I think that's a good time to sort of quickly get on to the Arsenal game. I think, I don't know if Arsenal kicked off yet today. I'm not entirely sure. But either way, that's the big game next week. The game got moved a little bit later as well on Sunday. So thankfully, not another early start for me. But I'm sorry, some of you guys might have to stay up a little bit later than you might have liked. So just heading into the Arsenal game, you know, we've showed you some scores, some goals. They're definitely a team that can put them away as well. We've shown some frailties at the back. I'm wondering what you guys are expecting out of this one. And I'll start with you, Pascal, and then sort of open it up to the group.
What am I expecting from the Arsenal game? I just expect to give a bit more effort. You know, even if we lose, obviously Arsenal are a very good side. So even if we lose the game, I just want to see a bit more. I want to see a bit more effort than, you know, if we kind of match the energy levels we showed in the second half, then we'll give them a game for sure. One thing I will say about Arsenal is they don't really thrash teams. If that makes sense. It's always like they win by the odd goal or two. As good as Arteta's made them at the back, going forward, they don't seem to have that kind of cutting edge that they had under like Arsene Wenger and Emery. So let's see. It could be a good game. I'm actually quite looking forward to it. I think it might be quite similar to the Leicester game, like more of like a kind of tactical battle. And we'll have a lot more joy, I think, in the middle of the pitch because they won't play as many midfielders there. So hopefully McGinn, Barkley and Luiz can cause whoever it is, I think it'll be Partey or whoever, cause some issues. So yeah, I think it'll be a good game. And I'm actually, dare I say it, a little bit more optimistic about this one.
Oh, sorry. I'm also more optimistic than today. Arsenal is playing Molde 2 days before our game, so maybe we have we're a bit more fresh, so I hope we can attack Arsenal and we play like the last 20 minutes today, because that was pretty good. So hopefully we won't sleep again the first half and lose the game again in the first half.
Very fair. And Chris, I'm curious as to, you know, I know you've mentioned you don't watch as much of the Premier League, but like looking at the Arsenal team, it's a bit more of a star power team. You know, they're on the TV a little bit more, just, you know, Europa League, Champions League, things like that. I'm wondering what matchups, you know, what players on their team do you think are worth watching and keeping tabs on? Because I know we have our one or two danger men that I'm sure they'll be honing in on, but I'm curious as to who you think, especially with the new look Arsenal team. I feel like there's been a lot of, you know, revamping in the squad there. Who Villa's going to need to keep an eye out for?
Thomas is a pretty good player. I think he signed on deadline day. Is that true? For a huge amount of money. He's a pretty good player in midfield. But, I mean, look at that front three. Aubameyang, he scored so many goals in Arsenal, in Dortmund. Lacazette is always a threat. I don't know how much goals William got last season. Or is he at Chelsea? He got, I don't know, 5 goals maybe last season. So Willian is like is maybe the weakest striker of them, but Elneny is playing at the moment with Thomas in central midfield, and Thomas is an intelligent player. He was the heart of Atletico midfield, so I think Thomas is a player to watch throughout the season, not by scoring goals, but like a McGinn or Douglas Lewis in our team.
Yeah, I think that is definitely, and it's definitely a good shout. I think he brings a dynamic to that midfield that they haven't necessarily had in a bit. Like, I think Torreira did it, but I don't think his physicality really matched what was being expected of him in the Premier League. And Yeah, I mean, Guendouzi had his moments, but I think, again, he kind of lacked what they needed in there. But I think Thomas brings some physicality. I think he brings some athleticism. I think he's also just, you know, he's really tidy on the ball. He keeps things moving. So that's definitely, I'm curious to see how our midfield copes with that. But I think, you know, Chris, you're spot on. That front three is always going to give you problems. Aubameyang, even though he hasn't been in the best form at the end of the season, you know, he's going to be able to go off at any moment, and that's just like kind of what he does, signing the big bonus, new contract. You know, Lacazette, a little bit more hot and cold for them, but still very, very reliable, and Willian's done it time and time again. So I think they're a good, balanced team, but I think Pascal said it really well. Like, they haven't necessarily throttled anyone over the course of the season so far. Maybe that's just the way they're being set up. Maybe that's just because they haven't fully gelled yet as a squad. But yeah, I think that's one that, you know, is there for the taking. Pascal, I don't know your thoughts on this Arsenal squad, just, you know, heading in, you know, matchups to really keep an eye out for.
They've got talent all over the pitch. Obviously, the main matchup for us is Aubameyang versus Matty Cash and Konsa on that left side for them, right side for us. And then obviously Grealish v Bellerin for us. In the middle, I think they'll be like the areas that decide the game. In the middle of the pitch, it's hard to really say how both teams are going to line up. I don't know if Smith will make changes or not. I don't really know what two midfielders Arteta will play, so we'll see. But I think the wide areas are going to be key to getting a result. And set pieces as well, massive, I think, in this game for us as well. Yeah, I think set pieces will be massive. You look how many goals Mings and Concha scored already. Do you know what I mean? And how effective they've been. They'll be massive for us.
And it's nice to see them chipping in, which was not something that was happening as much last season. You know, I think that's the sign of a good team. You can get goals from all over the pitch. And I'm not saying we're a great team, but like, I think we have the makings of a good team, a good solid mid-table team. We just need to put it together and have a few more performances, 90 minutes long, that, you know, we saw in the 20 minutes at the end of the game today.
So I was going to say, at the end of the day, you got to look at the bigger perspective. We've played 6 games. We've won 4 games. Would you, at the start of the season, I would have took anyone's hand up for that. Do you know what I mean? It's been a fantastic start. Absolutely fantastic. You know, let's hopefully not let this negative momentum kind of damage us. You know, obviously Arsenal's a tough game, which we could lose quite easily. But then we've got like Brighton, West Ham after that, which are like winnable games. So let's not be too downbeat. We're still doing better than we expected to do. And yeah, let's hopefully get a result next Sunday.
Absolutely. I think one thing that really gives me a little bit of hope, and, you know, Chris, I'd like to get your opinion on this as well, is that I think this season, in a way that I did not feel last season, I just know there's at least 5, maybe even 6 teams that are worse than us, like clearly worse than us. I don't want to name them in case we have any other fans listening. I don't want to ruin that for them. But I think it's, you know, it's pretty obvious that there is going to be a little bit bigger of an, you know, end of the pack kind of part of the league. We are not in that pack. But now I think what gets to be a little troubling, and, you know, I think Villa Twitter and, you know, the Villa social media spaces take this to an extreme, but, you know, the expectations are a little bit higher just because, like, we're not in that pack. You know, we're playing teams around us. But I think Pascal said it perfectly. Like, if you would have offered me 12 from the first 6 games, like, I'll bite your hand off. That sounds incredible. Chris, I don't know about you. How are you feeling about just like how everything is going right now? Like, are you the optimistic Villa fan that we're always seeing on the show, or are you feeling a little bit more, you know, downtrodden at the moment?
Man, the start of the season was so outstanding, and I think when was the last time we had a start of the season? I think it was 6 years ago, 70 years ago, something like that. So we have 12 points after 6 games, and let's be honest, let's be out of the zone, and out of the relegation zone, and that's what's matters first. I'm a typical German, so we in Germany we always do the low bar thing because of our teams. Let's slip out of this relegation zones the next years, and I'm happy, man. A good, solid, decent midfield table place this season, and next season maybe we can attack on 9th, 8th, 7th. Let's build a little bit patient, and maybe we can cheer in a few years, like the Wolves do at the moment in the Europa League or something like that.
Yeah, it's all about small steps. I completely agree. I'd take like 15th or something like that happily.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's all about momentum, building up steps. You're right, maybe in like 3 or 4 years. And I mean 3 or 4 years, we might be pushing for Europe, but we need to just stabilize ourselves as a Premier League club first before we can start dreaming like that.
Yeah, and if you want to put it into like even bigger perspective from last year, I mean, it took us 13 games to pass the 12-point mark. And, you know, look at us right now, sitting on 12 points after six. That's a really good return. And that's the return that when you look back at the end of the season, granted, like we start picking up some points, which we absolutely will before the Christmas period and through the Christmas period, like you're looking back at that and thinking to yourself, like, I'm glad we did it then and didn't have to wait for it now, because the last thing we want to do is for our league place to be decided on the last game of the season for, what would that be, the 1, 2, 3, 4th season in a row? I don't think anyone needs that again. But at this point, you know, at the risk of, you know, looking too far into the crystal ball, I'd like to get some score predictions and just, you know, your general result prediction for next week. So, Chris, as the guest, we'll start with you. How do you think this Arsenal game's going to go?
2-1 for the Villa. I'm optimistic, man. The last 20 minutes were good, so let's build on that.
Goal scorers?
Jackie and Watkins to build some momentum, self-confidence, man.
I'm gonna play it safe and go for my traditional Desmond Tutu. I think these are the kind of games where I think Watkins will do well in, because I don't know what it is. He seems to do well against like the better teams. It's really weird. You know, against the teams that you think he'll get a goal today. He doesn't really do much. And then against like a Liverpool, or I know he didn't score against Leicester, but he played really, really well. You know, he seems to like be much better in those games. I don't know, maybe it's the occasion or something. But yeah, I'll go with 2-2, and I'd happy take a draw.
Yeah, I think it's just a matter of stabilizing right now. I think there'll be goals in the game, but I think so much of this week's going to be spent trying to tighten things up for us. So I'm actually going to go for a 1-1. I think it'll be tight, but I think it'll be, yeah, I think Smith's going to really focus on neutralizing, but I think we're going to nick one. I think we're going to have some joy here. And I think he looks so confident grabbing the ball from Grealish for the penalty. I think Watkins will find the net again. Who knows how, maybe another penalty, but yeah, that's my take for the game. But Chris, thanks again so much for joining us this week. This is the point where we usually let our guests plug anything. So if you have anything to plug, social media, anything about the German villains, by all means, this is your time.
Thank you, guys. Twitter is our English page. On Facebook is mostly on German, so I think plugging makes no sense. So on Twitter, it's @GermanVillains, and that's it.
Fantastic. Pascal, anything you want to share with the nice people?
No, just keep listening and hopefully we get more fans from around the world.
Absolutely. Make sure you're, you know, liking, commenting, subscribing, sharing, retweeting, whatever you're going to do. As long as you're interacting with us, really appreciate it. And as always, if you want to get involved as a guest, you know, just, you know, interacting, asking questions, things you can feature on the show, hit us on our socials on Twitter. Just let us know. But until then, if no one has anything else to say, Chris, it's been a pleasure. And up the Villa.
The Villa.
Up the Villa.